ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you ever think that maybe the people making all the important decisions don't have a clue what they're doing?
Stable coins. Do you know what a stable coin is? Does anybody know? Please raise your hand.
The obvious solution to war is to have the West having the strongest, most precise, deadly weapons possible.
I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we take a look at every terrible decision that led to where we are today. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Housing is firmly back in focus, with Treasurer Jim Chalmers urging a long view on the downturn. It comes as Shadow Housing Minister Andrew Bragg unveils his plan to slash construction red tape and drastically reduce immigration figures. And the so-called Melongate saga continues to linger for the Prime Minister, with the opposition referring a leak of correspondence between Japan and Australia to the Federal Police. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm David Spears.
And David, we have to start, do we have to? Oh, that's a broader existential question, but we will start on Melongate.
Let's do it.
It's an extraordinary move the opposition have made. They've written to the Federal Police urging them to investigate an apparent leak of correspondence between Australia and Japan over this matter. This was the formal memo that actually RAF referred to yesterday when Japan noted the issue and said it had been sensationalised. So that's quite the issue. David?
To be fair, this is one of those that's out of the Labor playbook from when they were in opposition, this sort of referring something to the AFP to please investigate. So look, what's this about? It's about finding a way to keep the issue alive. It's about highlighting the curious leaking of what's meant to be private correspondence. It's about dialing up the pressure on the PM. It is, PK, most unlikely the Federal Police are going to investigate this. Let's just be clear about that. Just as the AFP didn't investigate all the things that Labor in opposition suggested they investigate, including some private messages from Emmanuel Macron to Scott Morrison over the submarines. Remember all of that. The AFP generally hates getting dragged into political stuff. They have plenty of other more serious things to spend their time and resources on. But the referral itself was the point for the coalition today, to keep the focus on the issue, and they've achieved that. Angus Taylor, along the way today, also tried to suspend parliamentary standing orders to move a motion demanding the PM apologise to his Japanese counterpart. Didn't have the numbers, obviously, to do that. But what that signalled to me was that the opposition leader himself isn't just leaving this to his minions, to others in his ranks. He's happy to take ownership of this issue and drive it. I was wondering yesterday in question time, when it was left to backbencher Mary Aldred to ask the questions of the PM, whether Angus Taylor wanted to take carriage of this. But today I think it's clear he does. And that shows that he's perhaps not worried that voters will scratch their heads about his priorities, that he actually thinks this is worth him as opposition leader leading the charge on.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's always very difficult, isn't it, to whether you go into something that can be quite grubby. Kind of, you sometimes want your other people doing all of the throwing the spears on these things.
Yeah, grubby and maybe not the main game for a lot of voters who, you know, cost of living, economy, housing, the sort of things he was asking questions about in question time yesterday. I got that. But yes, there's a risk in out. They've obviously calculated this is the one that is going to cut through and damage the PM. That's why Angus Taylor wants to take ownership of it. But I don't know whether that's the right call or not just yet, how voters are really going to feel about this.
I think the issue with the diplomatic consequences potentially, you know, gives them, I think, some legitimacy in intervening at that higher level. It's not just sort of, you know, social media talk in Australia and feelings here. It is,
it's about a profoundly important relationship with Japan.
And it is profoundly important.
Worth noting in that the correspondence we're talking about that was leaked, the suggestion is that Japan, the Japanese government, isn't too fussed about all of this, doesn't see it as offensive, and basically wants us all to drop this and move on, as does the Australian government. So it's the fact that it was leaked at all is the point the opposition's making.
Yeah, the fact that it was leaked at all, you know, they're obviously not saying it because they're wanting it to be investigated, but, you know, we know what the suggestion
just
is
giving
here.
Giving that extra life.
But we know the suggestion. Yeah, the suggestion is that the government leaked it. We don't know that for sure. I don't, but, you know, they could have, sure. And that, you know, they're obviously It's being shared to demonstrate that there isn't a problem with Japan, as the opposition is asserting.
Who stands to benefit if, you know, correspondence is out there suggesting that Japan's not too bothered by this? Well, obviously, the government, the Prime Minister. So, yeah, that's the suggestion here. We don't know. I don't know. Does this risk the relationship, though, if the opposition is continuing to stoke it, continuing to try and keep this issue alive and, you know, fire up more heat and anger over all of this? Does that risk creating more damage to the relationship?
Look, the bigger problem, I think, but I'm, you know, don't mean to be Pollyanna, but is you'd hope that on international affairs we would put up a unified front and not try to make relations with countries we need. Mm. And we do need to have a good relationship with Japan, rise of China, the region. We wouldn't want that.
But equally you'd say the same about what Labor did over Emmanuel Macron.
Yes, you would.
And Scott Morrison.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would.
Sometimes oppositions are going to grab these things.
Absolutely. And it takes me to, you know, the contradictions or the equivalence between different leaders. Because one of the points actually that Barnaby Joyce, One Nation Now, has made, you know, he's certainly joined the chorus. He said that there'd be a riot if it was about another kind of leader, right?
Well, he said, if it was about me, there'd be a riot. Probably right, to a degree.
He is, but I will add this, and I've got him on my show today, so I'll put this to him too, but sure, a riot, but he seems to survive all the riots.
He does.
It's kind of like I've never seen him fall over from the rioting.
Look, what about the PM in all of this? Of course, he's definitely disputing that he was engaging in any way in lewd joke about his Japanese counterpart. That's clear. His position is that, no, this is absolutely wrong. But does he need to give a fuller explanation about what he was doing on the podcast, what he brought up the melons for at all? Do you think, yes, he's been asked a couple of times in question time. No doubt he will be again today. Do you think he needs to do more to try and put this to bed?
I believe he does. So you asked me that. Mm. Will he is a different question. Mm. I think he's... Well, okay, what day are we on from the first opinion piece? Obviously, you know, so it's about writing it out sometimes. I feel like we are now Wednesday, our special day for the pod. We might have, and I might eat my hat, and I don't have a hat today, but, you know, I think we may have got to the point now where he's ridden it out long enough, unless the Japanese Prime Minister came out and said something. That would change the game, 100%. But I don't think
unlikely.
That's about to happen.
No.
And you can understand why. I actually said that to Andrew Lee yesterday, who I had on. He said the Japanese haven't raised an issue. I said, hang on a minute. A female leader of a country, she can't really. I mean, that's sort of, if you're putting that bar on it, oh, she hasn't complained. Well, of course she hasn't. Like, that's not the bar, is it? That's insane. Like, she has to sort of say, oh, I thought it was really offensive. And then he, you know, come on.
The fact that we're still talking about it is a problem for the government. The fact that this is, you know, still everywhere. There's plenty of other things going on sort of below the surface this week. The two leaders, Anthony Albanese and Angus Taylor, despite this issue, are actually talking more regularly than I think they have for a long time about the gambling reforms, news media bargaining code and the NDIS. And those talks, I understand it, are going to continue again today, third day in a row. So,
Bromance developing, do you think?
It's notable, isn't it, that... that these two major parties are trying to settle a few issues, not all issues, but for various, I think, pragmatic reasons on both sides. They want to get gambling, news media bargaining, and the NDIS changes settled in this sitting fortnight. They'll keep fighting over the economy and housing and cost of living and energy and all of that. But where they can agree, I think we're seeing some pragmatism on show this week.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, let's move to the Reserve Bank's decision to hold rates yesterday at 4.35%, a unanimous decision.
Yep.
Obviously, you know, good news in so much as, you know, if you've got a big mortgage, you didn't want to see an increase yesterday, but also government might be talking it up, but the Reserve Bank governor was very clear, I think, and it was pretty bleak. She is prepared to raise rates. You know, don't think it's not going to happen, right?
Although, as many have pointed out, I think this is a bit of good old-fashioned jawboning, as it's called, from the Reserve Bank governor. What that is, warning very loudly, there still might be another rate rise, so that we all keep a lid on it, you know, rein in our spending, fearing that there might be another rate hike coming, and that will help take some heat out of the economy. Look, Michelle Bullock's not wrong that inflation remains a problem, And there are still risks that, you know, clearly risks that, the US and Iran still can't settle things in the Strait of Hormuz. That could still risk seeing another jump in inflation. There are domestic risks as well. If the data center boom fuels inflation in the construction center, there are all these risks. But the RBA's own forecasts on inflation are now looking a little better, as Jim Chalmers points out. Although, PK, we're not getting back to that 2-3% target band until end of next year. So it feels like we've got a bit of a wait before any sort of rate cut comes along.
Yeah, and that means the doldrums that the government's in, because they are, in terms of where the Prime Minister's at, in terms of his personal approval, the general polling for Labor, as far as I'm going to make this call, that continues while that continues. Like, there is a link between the pessimism around the economy, around people's standard of living, and the way they feel about the government. So those things are linked.
Yep.
I think they're the biggest thing. It's not melons. I think it's...
I agree.
I'm stuck here. Nothing's moving. I can see no positive on the horizon. And I'm just sort of stuck in this holding pattern.
And I think next year, 2027 in particular, and in that second half, that's when the government does need to see things start to move, needs some signs that things are improving. Rates are going to come down. If not in that second half of the year, then early 2028, that's when the election's due. So, you know, as it worked out for Labor before the last election, it needs that last 6, 9, 12 months before the election to start showing signs of promise.
You mentioned housing and the ongoing fight around housing. Mm. The Shadow Housing Minister, Andrew Bragg, is speaking to the National Press Club today. His speech is titled Australia's Housing Necessities. He's going to unveil the opposition's plan to bring net overseas migration to just 180,000 people a year on average, a target that is 45,000 lower than Labor's short-term forecasts, and also reveal a push to dramatically reduce the number of pages in the National Construction Code. Now, that's interesting, David, because that one is actually broadly, even Labor says they want to reduce that. Claire O'Neill has said it to me many times. Yep. They know it's a problem.
Remember, they're in the process to do that right now.
They are. Remember when they were all reading the Ezra Klein book, Abundance, and they wouldn't shut up about it?
Too much regulation.
It's all part of that, right?
Yep.
And they are dead right, all of them. However, Andrew Bragg's going that next extra level, isn't he?
Yeah. So what's the figure? 80 pages. That's quite a cut. I mean, look, we
and Labor will run a scare campaign. You know, your roof's going to fall on your head.
Yeah, and this is where it gets interesting, right? Obviously, all of these things are a balance, right? You need some regulation to have quality housing built. Too much regulation, you're going to slow down the sector. So it's about striking that right balance. Clearly, it's too big. I mean, you know, if we were to print out a copy of it to theatrically demonstrate how big it is, you know, we'd run out of paper in our ABC printer out in the hallway, PK. So it's big. It's too big. Both sides get that. Both sides agree. Getting it down to 80 pages, though, and then we had this debate around, was it Tim Wilson, the Shadow Treasurer on RN this morning, talking about, look, there are some conditions in there around energy efficiency that maybe go too far. What was his line? What happened to just
wearing a jumper if
it's really cold, but only for 2 or 3 weeks a year, maybe the jumper will do rather than spending tens of thousands of dollars on an energy efficient house in certain parts of the country where we are in Canberra. Mm. Energy efficient houses are very good this time of year.
Yep.
As
do you want me to buy you a jumper?
A jumper would be nice. But look, the point is there's a balance there. 80 pages seems like an extreme cut to the building code, but look, he's signalling there that he wants to go further than the government. The other part of it you mentioned, the migration number is interesting as well, because I don't know if we've had the coalition set that number. And I don't know whether that's going to be the number they take to the election, but I think is kind of what Andrew Bragg's saying today. For now, this is what we're suggesting. Obviously, it depends on where various numbers go between now and the next election. But a 180,000 or less net overseas migration number, PK, that's quite a cut. What do you think?
It's huge. I'm actually surprised that Andrew Bragg's going to be unveiling it the way they've...
Rather than Angus Taylor?
Yeah, I didn't quite get that. However, okay, he is the housing spokesperson. He's pretty senior now in the Shadow Cabinet.
Is it saying that from the housing policy perspective, it would need to be 180,000 to get it down to the level we need for house supply?
Yeah, and to match their policy objective, which is how many people you bring in have to be matched to houses.
But
you
is
know,
it the definitive simple number they are now committed to? Or?
Well, these are the questions, right? This is the point of the press club. So he's going to give the speech where actually he's about to start as we're recording this.
Because the net
and they'll be the questions.
Yeah, net overseas migration, 300,000-ish. last financial year, government's forecast in its budget to get it down to 245,000 this financial year, 225,000 next financial year. How it's going to get there, that remains a mystery. We're still waiting for Tony Burke and to unveil the changes they're going to make. I think we talked about this last week. Cabinet didn't settle that, even though the PM was back this week. So they won't settle it, my understanding is, until next week. And then maybe we see Tony Burke unveil all of that. So the questions are still there for the government as to how they're going to reach their targets. But what Andrew Bragg's talking about is a whole lot further than that. That's some deep cuts to various visa programs. And that comes with a cost, an economic cost.
Yeah, this is the biggest part of the story. To the budget.
Yep.
How many taxpayers you've got in your country.
Yep.
And to, to aggregate
economy.
Demand.
Yep.
To businesses.
Well, what was
fewer
Michelle
migrants,
Bullock, the Reserve Bank Governor,
spending.
Saying yesterday? Where does growth come from? Without productivity, and boy, we don't have much productivity.
No, productivity also in their forecast went backwards.
It's going to be population growth,
mm-hmm.
i.e. migration.
Or it's not. Because remember, we're still waiting for the government to also cut migration. That hasn't happened
haven't got there yet.
Yet this week. And although I did speak with Lucy Ellis from
Westpac
yesterday or the day before, and she said they're not worried about, because it's like the government wants to get to the number they're meant to be at anyway, and that's all in the forecast. It's just that it keeps getting overshot.
Mm.
Anyway, okay, I digress.
And you also had on the migration issue Pauline Hanson talking today as well, PK, and Barnaby Joyce, but Pauline Hanson in particular was talking about a whole bunch of different numbers, but it sounds like a couple of numbers. 130,000 is the permanent migration number that One Nation is supporting. A little unclear what the net overseas migration number would be, but getting permanent migration down to 130, again, that's a big drop. And booting out, deporting, was it 75 to 100,000 visa overstayers, she mentioned. So deporting quite a number of visa overstayers as well. So the coalition in the end is, I think, trying to find that middle ground between where Labor's at, where One Nation's at, and present themselves as, the more responsible yet
believable
in this space.
Which is very hard for them to land that, because they can never out One Nation, One Nation.
Nope.
So they're sending that message. The government's clearly about to do something too. So sometimes they get lost in the weeds there a little bit. And
speaking
I think that's
of One Nation,
for them.
Speaking of One Nation, though, PK, you've got a story.
I do. So I get this. There's this One Nation candidate in WA, and he spoke.
State candidate.
Mm. So he's One Nation has not officially told me what they've done, but they've suddenly removed him from their website. Mm. He was there an hour ago before I recorded. So he's number three on the WA's Legislative Council ticket, but he was all over their website. Like he's, well known to people in WA, certainly to the political scene. But the video is just hideous. Like it's really genuinely shocking. I've played it to you. He described gay people as having a mental illness. He
talks about gay marriage being worse than animals?
Yeah. Essentially, they're better thinkers than humans who are being gay. Then he says he has got no problem with gays. He just doesn't like that they advertise with their marches, with their, I think he's referring to things like the Mardi Gras. He didn't say that, by the way.
He uses the word too much advertising.
Too much advertising. The advertising. But the mental illness stuff is really alarming. And Tim Wilson has responded. He's the most senior sort of, other than Penny Wong, I think, sort of gay leader in our country now. Tim Wilson, the shadow treasurer, saying, that this is alarming. The fact that, though, I ask Pauline Hanson's office and then suddenly it's no longer on the website within, seriously, I think it was a 20-minute delay.
So the candidate may, by the time you listen to this, may or may not have been disendorsed, but he's certainly been scrubbed from the One Nation website.
He's definitely been scrubbed.
After you ask the questions about his video.
Yes, because the video is, you saw it, did you? Because I told you it was bad, and then you looked like you
alarming.
Thought it was bad.
It's offensive, let's be clear.
It is farcical in its offensiveness. Mm. But the extra layer, which I do want to just say, which I think is really fascinating, is, he's an immigrant himself, right? So this is part of the sort of pitch from One Nation. Like, we have all sorts of people. We're not anti-immigration. Mm-hmm. It's the sort of Australian values. Then he he talks about these values. They are not Australian values, right? Like, there is a contradiction. It's not even Australian law. He doesn't even think gay marriage should be legal, but it is legal. Hmm. That's part of our country now.
Well, I guess it goes to what is the monoculture that One Nation wants around these issues in particular. Look, this again goes to the age-old problem for One Nation of candidate selection. It's one of the reasons why James Ashby has moved from Pauline Hanson's chief of staff into the role of party director to take a much closer look at and management of candidate selection, because that is something they need to get right. And look, you would think they will be able to improve things with him as taking a more forceful role there, overseeing this at the state and federal level. But yeah, it's been a problem for them for so many years, and clearly there are still some problems there.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a bit of a whack-a-mole approach as they go into the federal election, to be honest, where, you know, this is WA, but it's one party, and where, you know, problems will happen. James Ashby clearly is, I know it was, all my request has been forwarded to him, you know, it gets removed straight away. Like, so is that, it's a very whack-a-mole kind of approach to.
Well, it's a swift response, isn't it?
Because it's so alarming. Want to pivot again. John Howard has warned Angus Taylor against a coalition with One Nation. John Howard is important for lots of reasons, but he is the most senior kind of lauded, successful Liberal leader of a generation, and he's still here and he still has things to say.
He's the elder statesman on the Conservative side of politics, certainly for the Liberal Party. No surprise in what he says, though, right? I mean, Angus Taylor himself has been emphatic now that there will be no coalition. So I don't think it's that surprising that John Howard is saying don't get into a coalition with One Nation. Notable that the former Prime Minister John Howard is also quoted in the article as saying, you know, but depending on what the voters elect, the coalition, as in the Liberal and National parties, you know, will have to work on forming a minority government. So not saying there should be no acceptance of support for supply and confidence from One Nation in a minority government, but no coalition per se. As I say, I don't know. I don't find it that surprising,
no,
given, this is being emphatically ruled out by Angus Taylor, Jane Hume. I know Andrew Bragg, what did he say a couple of weeks ago? Well, we're going to be pragmatic. But I think that goes to what they do in a minority government, not forming a coalition necessarily with One Nation.
Yeah, I mean, it's all in the language, right?
Yep.
When Julia Gillard had to govern in minority government with the Greens and a couple of independents,
yes,
you know, obviously that left a stain.
It wasn't a coalition, but it was poorly presented with that signing ceremony at the start with Bob Brown that made it look like a coalition, made it look like such a formalised agreement rather than, you know, what Labor learnt from that point on. I think that it's better just to have, some commitments of supply and confidence, but don't make it look like you're all holding hands in a coalition. What would be interesting for the Liberal Party, I think, PK, to hear from is Tony Abbott on this. As the party president, does he also agree with John Howard and Angus Taylor that there should be no coalitions with One Nation?
Do you think he would agree with that?
Well, possibly. I don't know. I'd be really interested to hear him say that.
Because he's, I don't think it's clear what role Abbott's playing on these issues. I think that's still very much in formulation, isn't it?
Why John Howard has
decided
to weigh in?
Yeah. And I've spoken to many, now that you mentioned we have to go there, Tony Abbott, so many people since he's become federal president who say to me, and I'm talking scores, many people in the Liberal Party, MPs, staffers, senior people, like scores. Seriously, like scores sounds like 100, sorry. I mean, you know, like a decent number who say this is such a big problem for us, Abbott's presence now. He's overshadowed Angus Taylor. You know, they're worried about him overshadowing. They say now that has happened. That's the role he's playing. He is not sticking to his commitment of, you know, he made this commitment, I'm not going to comment much, I'm just going to do the job. His views on multiculturalism that we put on insiders, while you were away, I missed you. But, you know, like multiculturalism is a fail. Like really, this guy is causing, I think, a lot of disruption in the Liberal Party, and how that ends is like anyone's guess.
No, and he's not the sort of person, Tony Abbott, to retreat, to...
He loves a fight.
...stay mum, to, you know, not weigh in and not offer his views on more than What do the moderates keep saying? The administrative side of things is really what they should be focused on. That's not Tony Abbott.
Nah, he's not an administrative kind of guy.
No. Anyway.
He's a street fighter. Thank you, David. Always
thanks,
good.
Bigo.
Do we miss anything?
Nah. I think we've got it all.
That's enough. Yeah. I think you've had a good time. That's it for politics now today. David, what have you got on Insiders on Back on Saturday?
Talking to Martin Laverty, former board member for many years of the NDIA, you know, very well-credentialed authority figure in the disability sector, about the NDIS changes. Why now? Because on Friday, we're expecting to see the Senate report the inquiry that's been running into the government's proposed changes, and the government is very hopeful early next week of legislating this. It's one of the things that Anthony Albanese and Angus Taylor have been talking about throughout this week, along with gambling and so on, settling a deal between the two major parties on the NDIS. So we'll talk to Martin Laverty about where that's going and where it should go.
Excellent. Fran will be back with me for the Party Room tomorrow. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to theparty@abc.net.au and we'll endeavour to answer it in our question time edition. See you, David.
See you, PK.